Hello, and welcome to another episode of Vegas TMI, the official City of Las Vegas podcast where we talk about the things that make the City of Las Vegas timely, memorable, and iconic. I'm Shane.
And I'm Jen.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, Shane.
The weather's getting colder, and we just survived a raucous, long, exhausting city council meeting. A new ordinance was just approved there that makes it a misdemeanor to camp or sleep in the public right-of-way, such as a sidewalk, in the downtown and in residential areas. That was November 6th, and we are still reeling from the repercussions.
Yeah, I mean, this ordinance has generated a lot of conversation in our community. And while there has been a lot of feedback, there's also been a lot of confusion, too. For starters, if space is available at the Courtyard Homeless Resource Center or another nonprofit provider in the Corridor of Hope, the ordinance will not be enforced.
Yeah, so each day, I guess, the providers are going to do a bed check. And as long as the beds come back zero, then the ordinance will not be enforced. There's also some confusion about what the city is doing to try to break the cycle of homelessness. We've allocated $16 million over the next few years to build out the services that we've offered at our Homeless Courtyard Resource Center. It's just been off the ground for a little over a year. There are plans to expand it even further.
Yeah, and I mean, those aggressive long-term plans include shade structures, new building construction, more beds, landscaping and furniture to outfit a range of spaces from a clinic and kitchen to case management offices. In addition, a portion of this plan includes operational costs that will include medical care, intake, social services, security, and housing services.
Yeah, the courtyard opened in August of 2017 at 3144 Master Lane downtown. More than 28,000 requests for services have been taken. And that is, you know, that's a staggering number for the past 2 years. In July of 2019 alone, city staff assisted more than 1,400 individuals at the courtyard. So it's a problem that is huge, but we are doing our best to get our arms around it. And
I think it's important for everyone to know as well that at the courtyard, we don't turn anyone away. And it's considered a no-barrier shelter, meaning you don't have to pass a breathalyzer or be separated from your family if you enter into the courtyard. And we even accept pets. So we've tried to remove all barriers that would prevent people from entering a shelter-type atmosphere. But it really is a one-stop shop to get anyone suffering from homelessness immediate access to the services that they need to potentially keep them off the streets or get them off the streets.
Yeah, and it is a safe space. There is security there. It's open 24 hours. And we've been there quite a few times. They'll take anybody, and if they can't find a space for them, then they will work with partners to find a space for them.
To help clear up the confusion and talk more about how we are working to break the cycle of homelessness in our community, Communications Director David Riggleman will talk to Kathy Thomas Gibson, the Director of Community Services for the city, and Nina Ridgway, who heads up the Veterans Community Advisory Board. She's also a retired Air Force veteran and works for Goodwill of Southern Nevada as the Director of Career Center Services. David, take it away.
Thanks for listening, everyone. This is Communications Director David Riggleman. A new ordinance aimed at getting the city's homeless population off the streets and connected with services was approved by the Las Vegas City Council on November 6th. The ordinance makes it a misdemeanor to camp or sleep in the public right-of-way, such as a sidewalk, in the downtown and in residential areas if space is available at the Courtyard Homeless Resource Center or another nonprofit service provider in the Corridor of Hope. The ordinance went into effect on Sunday, November 10th, but won't be fully enforced until February 1st. Now, there's been a lot of intense feedback and discussion about the issue of homelessness and the ordinance from presidential candidates all the way down to local advocates. Here to talk about the state of homelessness and the new ordinance are Kathy Thomas Gibson, the Director of Community Services for the City of Las Vegas, and Nina Ridgway, who heads up the Veterans Community Advisory Board. She's a retired Air Force veteran and works for Goodwill of Southern Nevada as the Director of Career Center Services. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Kathy, let's start with you. There are actually 107 other cities across the United States that have the same or similar ordinances to the City of Las Vegas, but people have really kind of missed that fact, haven't they?
They certainly have. In fact, one of the cities that has it is San Antonio, Texas. So when a formal official from San Antonio was speaking in front of City Hall about the ordinance, it was curious to me because his own city actually has one very similar, and we had an opportunity to visit there and pull some of the best practices from San Antonio and adapt them for our context.
Yeah, I know we're Las Vegas and we're going to be more well known than many of the other 107 cities on that list, but it's almost as if we invented this type of ordinance, and nothing could be farther from the truth.
Oh, absolutely not. There are hundreds of other cities, literally hundreds of other cities all across the nation who have implemented both full bans and partial bans. By the way, ours is not a full citywide ban. Some of those cities are in the east and south. They're in a different judicial circuit. So one of the reasons it was of unique conversation here is because there had been some decisions out of the Ninth Judicial Circuit that struck down or put an injunction against some kinds of bans. But those bans are different from ours in some key ways. And so that's why we believe that this particular ordinance really addresses what we're trying to address and is not targeting people who are experiencing homelessness.
The ultimate idea is to get people into the services, right?
Absolutely. And as the way the ordinance is written, it really focuses on some key areas of the city, residential and the downtown urban core. Doesn't ban folks from being on sidewalks all over the city. And the reason that's important is because there are some health and sanitation issues that are associated with encampments where people experiencing homelessness don't have adequate restrooms and other sanitation services. So to have that in a residential neighborhood, in people's front lawns, in the shared city parks, and the public right-of-way actually has a negative impact both for the people experiencing homelessness and for other constituents trying to use that public right-of-way.
Yeah. Nina, let's shift gears, address a question to you here. How has this ordinance been received by the nonprofit community? I take it not so well.
Well, it was definitely a shock to the system, right? So the things that I hear are definitely maybe the way that it was rolled out, not necessarily that people weren't aware that it was coming, but like Kathy stated, you know, some of the reasons why that was rolled out, maybe to some of the service providers, because, you know, and looking at, you know, some of the concerns that those agencies had, maybe if there was a community town hall, if you will, something of that sort, to just kind of give what this entails, like how we can be a part of the solution. That is one solution, but once you do that, then it creates a whole other issue of, you know, people being concerned because, of course, everybody goes to the extreme. Well, I'm going to jail. I got to pay this fine without fully understanding what the ordinance said. And so I just feel like with the nonprofit community and those service providers that are actually providing services for those individuals, you know, maybe bring those agencies together just to explain what it is and how we can help,
right?
How we can provide those services for those individuals.
I think the mayor has said all along, as well as City Attorney Brad Jurbik, that the intent really isn't to send people to jail. We know
right.
that how is someone who's living on the street going to be able to afford a fine, et cetera. But the idea is to make them move to where the services are available to help break that cycle of homelessness. And I think that's really been the motivation behind all this. Hopefully, it'll have some impact. We've been talking about the issue for many years, but the need has only grown.
Right. So, again, maybe just a community forum so that we understand what our role as service providers would be, I think would probably be more beneficial for us to understand what that is and then be of service. Because, of course, you know, I don't think that it was created to send people to jail, but that's what people latched on to, or people latched on to the up to $1,000 for, you know, fee for being out, when in essence, I'm sure that that's not what the purpose was, but that's what people seem to latch on to. So I think that there was a messaging issue more than the issue itself of the ordinance.
Well, it's interesting. The city council obviously feels that by helping get the homeless off the streets and into the shelters, it'll help break that cycle of homelessness. As Kathy said, it'll protect not only the homeless, but the surrounding community as well. We've seen hepatitis outbreaks in other major cities as a result. Kathy, tell us more about how the city is working to break the cycle of homelessness. This is just one thing that we're doing. It's not the answer to everything by any stretch.
Absolutely not. And so the city has been working on a continuum of interventions for several years now. So we have a street-based outreach team that is multidisciplinary. We want to meet people where they are. So that outreach team includes family service providers. It includes mental health providers, veteran service providers, so that we can divert folks who are on the street so they don't have to get into the cycle, that they can go directly to the appropriate service provider. If we're not able to connect them with the service provider at that point, our street-based outreach teams will take them to the Courtyard Homeless Resource Center. And that's where people might need a little more time to get connected to the right kinds of services. We've discovered so many people who don't have identification, it makes it difficult for them to connect to services if they can't prove they are who they say they are.
Or to get a job, yeah.
Any of that. Mm-hmm. And so the resource center then spends a little more time. They're actually navigators and case managers there to put together a case plan. We may need to work with someone over a longer period of time to get them connected to appropriate services. We also do bridge and transitional housing. So we have some individuals who have benefits, but again, they can't prove they are who they say they are, so they can't pull those benefits down. We'll bridge house them for 30 days, temporary housing, so that a case manager can work with them in that 30-day period rather than them going back to the street, because it's sometimes hard to reconnect. If you don't connect immediately, you might lose contact with that participant. We also do a master lease program. That's where we put our families with children. Sometimes it takes more than 30 days when you've got a lot of moving parts, and often our families with small children have multiple issues that they are addressing. Domestic violence is a common issue. Parents trying to keep custody of their children is another issue. And so we want to house them in an apartment, open market apartment, and we underwrite the cost of that so that the family can stay there up to 6 months. And then we also fund with our federal dollars the development of affordable housing. So we just, this year alone, well, up to about 700 units at this point of affordable housing. And we use our home and low-income housing trust fund dollars to support the building of affordable housing. Of course, the challenge is it might take 2 years before those units are
yeah.
there for mm-hmm. our families. And that's why we have the other interventions that are street-based or transitional, so that we have a little more time to work with those families and get them connected.
You know, Kathy, it's interesting when you talk about this, and I've heard you talk about this in the past, people, many of them will say, I had no idea the city was doing all this.
Indeed, indeed. And so it's interesting because I would love to have the same level of passion and engagement from the community on all the other areas where we're doing this work. We were just up at the state legislature earlier this year requesting additional dollars to put into housing specifically for the homeless. And we had a handful of community partners come out to speak on the issue, but not nearly the number that we had speaking on the ordinance.
Right, right.
And so the criticism many people lobbed at us during the ordinance was build more housing. Well, just 6 months ago, we were asking for additional funds for the authority from the state to
do just
create
that.
This mm-hmm. revenue stream to do exactly that. And so I want the community to be vocal on all sides of this issue. We welcome it. And there are opportunities for them to say at every level of government, at every level with the philanthropic and the for-profit sector, what they can do to help us get more housing built.
Nina, I want to ask you, you're an Air Force veteran. We've had some success here in Las Vegas, especially when it comes to housing our veterans. That's one area where we have made some inroads. certainly.
Yeah. So, so there's a couple of things that actually we're doing. And kudos to the mayor's team for that. We're doing the mayor's challenge to prevent suicide amongst veterans and their family members. So that's an initiative to actually pull together the resources for those that serve, that have served in their family members in terms of trying to address some of those issues that a veteran may have as they make either are in the military or making the transition to get out. So housing is one of those things, as well as, you know, employment and some other things. So the mayor's team, some of Kathy's coworkers over there are, you know, doing great things and trying to address some of those issues. We also have the Southern Nevada Veteran Community Engagement Board is a whole, you know, conglomeration or coordination of different agencies that provide services, not just the veterans, but in this particular instance, it is focused on those individuals. And it's not just housing, it's not just employment, it's wellness, it's mental health. Again, it's suicide prevention. It's whatever it is that that person that served and their family member needs to ensure that they're not facing some of those challenges like homelessness and or, you know, underemployment or unemployment. So you know, there are some things, and I think there are some examples that maybe as a community as a whole, we can use to make sure that everybody in the community takes part in this. Because again, like Kathy said, just a little bit of the public comments that I heard, you know, and the fact that it lasted for what, upwards of 4 hours.
It was a long hearing.
That means that we have a lot of people in this community that are really passionate about making sure that we're taking care of the people of our community. And so, you know, it could be that, you know, as a city level or even as a county level, that we at least bring in all of the service providers so that we can understand as a whole entire community, how we can support the efforts of the city, of the state, of the county, and making sure that we get those people the assistance that they need. Because here's one thing that comes to mind for me is we may be taking care of it in the city, but we have North Las Vegas, we have, you know, Summerlin, absolutely, we have Henderson. Yep. And if they're moving from here, you know, they're going to be, all these other cities are going to be impacted. I think we have to do it as a regional event or at Southern Nevada, at least, you know, so that we all understand and that we all can play a part in that.
Well, and that's really a good point. Our research indicates more than 6,500 individuals and families in Southern Nevada lack permanent housing. This is an important figure, with 67% of our homeless population sleeping outside. It's incredible. Kathy, many naysayers of the ordinance point to things like a lack of affordable housing and shelter space as the real issues here. But you touched on this. Really, we've tried to have those issues addressed, and up until this ordinance discussion, it really hasn't gained the momentum until this discussion.
Indeed, and we've been involved at a regional level for at least a decade, right? So we've been working with the Southern Nevada Regional Continuum of Care. We discuss these issues every single day. In fact, I chair that board this year, and that's a regional effort where we actually do have the other cities. We have other not-for-profit partners at the table discussing these issues. And so the ordinance was a flashpoint. And in some ways, a very good thing that it has lifted, it's elevated the conversation so that it's a community-wide conversation now.
And I think to Nina's point, people that were maybe quiet before are engaged now. And really, that is a good thing.
It is a good thing.
We're about out of time, but I wanted to ask this question of both of you. Where do you see the state of homelessness in Las Vegas in 5 years? Nina, we'll start with you.
Ooh, that's a hard one. Because we're so transitional and people, you know, come, you know, military folks, they get out of the military here. hopefully in 5 years, we find ourselves in a position to where anyone that seeks any type of service to keep them off the street, to make sure that we take care of them, they have a point of contact. Like one point of contact will expose them to all of the programs and services that are actually already here in Las Vegas.
I absolutely echo that. We want to build a system where if homelessness occurs, it is brief, it is rare and one-time occurrence for that individual or that family, and that the system exists so that they can quickly get back on their feet. Yeah. And that's where I hope we are in 5 years.
Here, here. Well, thank you both for being here today and being part of this podcast. Great discussion all the way around. You both had some great insights, and we really appreciate it. Thanks to all of you who are out there listening. We appreciate you being a part of our audience. You can learn more about the city's efforts to break the cycle of homelessness by going to lasvegasnevada.gov/homeless. Again, thanks for listening, everyone.
Okay, so that was a great conversation. Kathy Thomas Gibson, you can tell she's got a lot of passion and a lot of heart. She really cares about this issue, and she really wants to see some progress in this area. And as we heard, we need more services, and they're going to roll out at the Courtyard next year.
Our city manager, Scott Adams, has also been appointed to the state's task force that will spend the next year studying strategies to reduce homelessness in our community and to even explore potential sources of funding.
Yeah, this issue is not going to go away, so we will revisit it in a future episode and talk about more changes as our community continues to work to break the cycle of homelessness and as more resources come online.
And you can catch up on past episodes of our podcast at lasvegasnevada.gov/podcast.
And you can subscribe to this podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, so Google Play Music Store, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you want, we'll be there.
So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
TTFN from Vegas TMI.